Hello, and welcome to Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mann.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
This is Back Issue Spotlight number 45 for Doomsday Clock numbers 10 through 12. We're finally going to finish that one up. And this is in place of a weekly comic spotlight for what I think would have been May 13th, 2020, but I've lost count. It's been so long since we've gotten new comics.
Very true.
So it is just a little insane there. But like I said, this will finish off Doomsday Clock, which I'm looking forward to. I've been enjoying the read, but there's been some frustrations. I'll admit.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. It's not, I wouldn't say it's a bad book. It's just something that I didn't enjoy as much as I thought I would have when I went back and read it.
Yeah, definitely. There are parts I've liked and not so much. Shall we jump into number 10?
Yeah, let's do that.
Now, when we get to this first page, it's black and white.
Love it.
So we're immediately thinking budget cuts. No, I'm kidding. It's the adjournment film that we've been hearing about since the beginning of this series, you know, a bazillion years ago. And this is the issue where we finally, I think, start to get the context of why we're seeing this.
Exactly, because up until now, it's just been a frustration because, I mean, they went through 9 issues of showing this stuff, and we have no clue until now. And this is a year and a half later.
Well, and even this page, we go through 9 panels, and then we realize, oh, wait, it's the filming, not the finished version. And they do a very subtle kind of a shift from her to him, where it's a little crisper or whatever. So we're in flashback, but not in the movie. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I agree.
But when we get to that second page, there's one or two things that are easy to miss on this.
Okay, what did I miss?
Well, maybe you caught it. The guy giving the coffee.
Okay.
That's Johnny Thunder.
I did not realize that. Okay. I just saw him as background characters. I didn't really pay attention. Okay, that makes sense now.
Got no idea why he's there, what's going on. Nothing is made of it, but he's there messing up a drink order.
Yep, I missed that one.
And this is one of those places where the jumping around of the captions by Dr. Manhattan, it just gets annoying.
It really does. It's all over the place on that page, and it's just like, and he just keeps on jumping back and forth in time. I do this, I do that, and this changes, and this changes. It's very difficult to read like that.
I get that's how Manhattan sees time, but it's hard to really piece together the story at that point.
Yeah, I would say if I was a writer and I'm writing a, you know, first-person narrative, I would not use him as the first person, you know? Because being able to see multiple possibilities, it's just going to be confusing to people who don't think that way. And humans don't think that way. We're not quantum computers that we think about this timeline, all at the same time. So it's just difficult.
I'd have to reread Watchmen, but I'm wondering if typically when we get that, if we were actually seeing what was happening in those time frames, whereas here we're staying in the present day.
Yeah, I can't remember.
So the captions are covering what we're not seeing.
Yes, and to kind of pulling you out of the story that's going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's what causes frustration to the reader because you're reading and you're like, okay, almost at times I felt like maybe I'll skip the blue boxes.
Well, and there was a part of me that as I was reading this, it's like, do I really care what's going on in the movie?
Yes, exactly. You're like, do I read just the blue boxes? Do I read the movie? The movie seems like it has no bearing on the story. So you get to the point where you're like, I'm trying to read Dr. Manhattan, but he's jumping all over the place. So you're like, one I don't care about, and the other one is all over the place. And this was part where I was getting really frustrated in the story right here.
Yeah, same here. And if somebody sees the relevance of the movie to the overall plot, one, congratulations. And two, I wouldn't mind knowing, but honestly, I'm not that interested.
Me neither.
We get to page 3, the filming's done, Coleman's hanging out at a bar, we find out he's getting blackmailed, and the blackmailer is his mother.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I'm like, wow, what a great family.
Yeah, you gotta love it.
When we get to the next page, it starts out in color, shifts to black and white as we go from the filming, I guess, into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the most notable thing on this page were the final two captions that we get from Dr. Manhattan.
Exactly. That was kind of cool.
Worlds live, worlds die, nothing lasts forever. Do you get what that's referring to?
I liked it. I thought it was very... what is it referring to specifically?
The Crisis on Infinite Earth's tagline was, worlds will live, worlds will die, and nothing will ever be the same.
Ah, okay. I didn't piece that, but I thought it was something in relevance to the DC universe and, like, Crisis, basically how the things come and go in DC. So, yeah, it does tie into that.
Which is ultimately the message of Doomsday Clock.
Exactly.
So, there's a... Again, I wouldn't say that's relevant to the movie, but, you know, Geoff Johns is trying to harken back to, you know, canonical milestone events in the DC universe, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
We then get another page. We spend a little bit of time on Mars. This is where we're actually bouncing in time visually with Manhattan remembering to put air out there for Silk Spectre. Cut to the present day where some of the heroes seem to be having problems because that sure looks like Elastigirl there of the Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
But again, the bouncing back and forth in time, kind of annoying.
Yeah, it's all over. And you do see that one, you know, jumping ahead. I hate to jump ahead, but the little picture on the ground means something.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's just foreshadowing. But when I first read it, I didn't realize. I'm like, what's the relevance of this?
Well, and we also, and I'm not sure if this is from Watchmen exactly or just something we know, but when Manhattan's saying, I'm leaving this galaxy for one less complicated. And it's not in space, it's in the multiverse, and he enters the DC universe at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
So, for one less complicated, I think he went in the wrong direction.
I would agree, where continuity is all over the place.
He winds up in Hollywood on April 18th, 1938. The relevance of that date, of course, is that's when, and maybe not of course, but the relevance of that date is when Action Comics number 1 was released.
Yep, that I did check on.
Because I was curious why that date.
Me too.
We get a page of kind of a quick history of Carver Coleman's backstory as a kid, what happened with his mom. He wound up in L.A., got a job, a stage burns down, he gets fired, gets another job, gets fired, and winds up on the street.
Yeah, where the cops proceed to assault him, seeing him as a vagrant laying around.
Well, of course, the ninth panel on page 6, though, we get the blue light, you know, why are you here? It's a regular bubble. It should have been our first clue. But the expectation is, oh, this is when he meets Manhattan.
That's what I thought when I saw that. I was like, oh, Dr. Manhattan's showing up. And yeah, and then they're like, no.
Then it's the cops to beat the tar out of him.
Yep, exactly.
Isn't this what we kind of saw cops doing in the Watchmen world with Mime and Marionette as kids?
It's the same world.
Well, this is in the DC universe, so it's not.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's not the same world, but it's the same stuff going on inside this world. He was, like, going to a place less complicated. I'm like, seems like the same stuff.
Yeah. And it sure seems at the end of page 7 that Manhattan's location picking for where he landed in the DC universe, not so good.
Yeah, I agree.
Pretty much explodes the police car.
Which is kind of cool, but not good.
Yeah. But, you know, Carver, you know, checks out the cops, make sure they're okay, even though they were just beating him up. This, of course, sort of puzzles Manhattan.
Yeah, he's like looking at him like, why are you doing this?
And, of course, we then cut to the present day, and Hal of the Green Lantern Corps is going to summon for backup, and Manhattan says, no, no, you're not, and just peacefully incapacitates everybody. I guess he puts them to sleep?
It looks like it. It's almost like the Vulcan touch, you know, with Spock. You know, he just touches them, and they all pass out.
Yeah, couldn't tell quite what was going on there.
Yeah.
And we cut from, you know, a shot of Earth to a shot of the Warner Brothers logo. That's the company that released the Nathaniel Dusk movies. Coincidentally, that is also the studio that Dan Cassidy worked for when he became Blue Devil back in the 80s.
Oh, okay. And almost like Warner Brothers.
Absolutely. So definitely a riff off that for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And this is where Manhattan first starts talking with Carver and introduces himself as John.
Yep.
Because I guess saying he's Dr. Manhattan from a parallel universe, a little off-putting maybe.
Yeah, just a tad. Not that he's already blue and naked. That's probably a little off-putting too. But
yeah, it is. I've got some comments about that later.
Okay.
They decide to head to a diner to go eat, so sure, why not? And we get the explanation that nobody's seeing Manhattan the way he is because he's shifting light's color frequencies to see what he wants her to see. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. It reminded me of, remember they did that in Fantastic Four that we reviewed with Sue Storm kind of reflecting the light and changing mm-hmm. her hair color and stuff. It just reminded me of that.
Yeah, yeah. It's the wave the hands and make certain things go away.
Yeah.
And then we get a page of the two, you know, at the diner talking and Manhattan deciding to kind of see if he can see into the future in this world.
Yep, and he's unable to.
But then he uses Carver to kind of focus on, and that helps.
Yeah, and that's where we tie into the movie, finally.
Yeah, because we start to see that he's got the part a year from now and all of this. And we spend so much time in this booth in the diner bouncing back and forth in time. It, too, got a little annoying.
It really did. But, I mean, for whatever reason, he has to focus on this guy to be able to see the different alternate timelines and realities, which is weird.
Yeah.
He needs an anchor.
Well, he needs something in this universe to focus through, whereas he was part of his own universe, and kind of makes sense, but not totally.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I don't know how he was able to do it, but I just kind of rolled with it, and I'm like, okay, he's using this guy, and this guy is the anchor that gives him some ability to use his powers, but just kind of bizarre at the same time.
Yeah, things get a little more bizarre when he overhears the radio broadcast about a mystery man lifting a car over his head, which, of course, April 18th, 1938, Superman.
Yep.
At which point he blinks out of the diner, leaving the photo that we find out on the next page.
Yep.
And the rest of that next page, page 13, honestly confused me a bit. We've got that middle panel where we've got the crashed car and a cop saying, oh, yeah, you know, what's going on? Some man did this. Oh, yeah, it was a wrestling outfit, a cape, you know, whatever. But that last row of panels, the bottom one,
mm-hmm.
Manhattan is there. The people are there talking about it. Suddenly, the people are not there.
Yeah, they just disappear.
And the world has changed.
Yeah. And I didn't understand what happened, but I guess he thought a different existence. I don't know.
For me, I wasn't quite sure, but there were a couple of things that I took out of that sixth panel on this. First off, they were never here. Manhattan wasn't causing this time change.
Yeah.
I don't recall there being a particular uproar over this issue, nor a mature reader's warning on the cover.
When they show him nude, right there.
we see some parts.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, in the background of that panel, there's a hotel sign and rooms, $20. 1938.
Which, that does seem kind of pricey, really pricey.
I'm presuming that's a per-night occupancy rate, because what else would they advertise?
Yep.
I did a thorough Google search of Hotel 1938 and found that the Hotel Lexington in New York, this is Metropolis, so we'll assume New York, Metropolis, big-sized cities. Hotel Lexington in New York only charged a maximum of $8 a night and a minimum of $3 a night. So 20 bucks a night? Kind of crazy.
And it doesn't look that nice.
It does not look that nice.
Yeah.
This looks like on the edge of town kind of place.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of desert landscape out there and rocks. So, yeah, it just didn't seem, yeah, that doesn't seem very realistic.
And again, something changed time at this point that he's witnessing, not doing.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the first time I read it, I was questioning, did he change something? Just blink his eye and do it? Because he's not saying, oh, I did this and this happened. It's just, boom, it's changed. Everyone's gone, the car's gone, and nothing. And so he's kind of, huh.
But then on the next page, Superman and the car are back.
Yeah, it's like he went back in time to view it again. I don't know what happened there.
I'm not sure. And there's the mention of the many worlds kind of, you know, splitting timeline theory. And I guess he's at the point where it branches or something, and he's not firmly rooted in the DC universe or something. I don't know.
And that's the thing. I didn't know how to read this. I didn't notice. Are we supposed to view this as he's jumping back in time to before it to witness it? Did something literally change and he warped into a different reality? I don't know how to view this.
I wish I could tell you, but I don't know.
Yeah. So, once again, this is something that's happened. I didn't really understand it, but I just kind of rolled with it.
You kind of have to, and I'm not saying it was a fault or a flaw of the story or anything, but it's one of those that it does make you kind of scratch your head thinking, what exactly did I just read and how was I supposed to interpret that?
Yeah. What am I supposed to be getting out of this?
Yeah. Yeah. But this is where, at the bottom, we get Alan Scott reaching for that lantern, and then on that next page, we get a shot of essentially the origin moments for the Golden Age: Flash, Hawkman, Atom, Dr. Fate, Sandman, Spectre, and Hourman.
Yeah, so you basically have the whole JSA there.
Exactly. We end on the brownstone. They're waiting for Superman. We get that next page where we've got kind of that iconic shot of them around the round table for the JSA talking about forming up the team.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. People who like the JSA, this is kind of cool. You're seeing the beginnings of the team, and then stuff happens.
Yeah, the next page, the 17 there, it gets a little weird because, hey, we're not quite ready to take the photo, you know, not everyone's costume's quite right just yet, and Superman's not here. Johnny's about to, actually, he does call the super, the Thunderbolt. He's about to send him after Superman, but mid-word, something happens. We're back a few seconds, and they're ready to take the photo.
Yeah, and they're like, the entire team is here, but Superman's not there, almost like he didn't exist or something.
Exactly. And then,
and so that's where it got kind of weird again. You're like, oh, huh.
I was a little confused after that middle panel where we've got Green Lantern saying, yep, the entire team's here, Alan Scott and stuff. We then cut to that same shot, but the room's empty.
Completely empty. Like, everyone's gone, all the heroes.
The books on the bookcase are gone.
Yeah, everything's gone. It's a barren house. And Manhattan's there. Where is he?
So I guess this is what that would have been like, not only originally when Superman was back in the Golden Age, but then after, when the Golden Age happened, but Superman wasn't there, but then after, when not even the JSA happens.
Exactly.
So there's a lot to kind of be reading into what's going on here, and other people may have other interpretations.
Yeah, and to make it more difficult with the time jumps and the stuff going on with the way Manhattan speaks, it makes your brain kind of jump all over the place, and you're trying to pick out what's really happening and what's really going on. And so it almost makes the book a difficult read when you're going through it. More difficult than it should be, I think.
I think there's a surface-level read to be had, but I think there's a deeper read to be had, and that deeper read is a little headache-inducing. It's good, but things aren't immediately obvious.
Yeah, you almost have to, like, do a retake. You're like, wait a minute, what just happened? Okay, and then you can interpret it one way, I can interpret it a different way.
Exactly, exactly. Page 18, we've got Carver waiting in the booth in this case, 1948. Waiting for his, you know, yearly prophecy of what's going to happen to him.
Yep.
And Manhattan's like, have you ever heard of Superman? He's like, no. Tell me what's happening for my next year. And Manhattan bails.
He's like, I got to find out what happened to this Superman guy.
And apparently heads to the Kent farm.
Yep.
And this next page, 19, was kind of interesting because it's now 1965 when Superman's first seen, 25 years earlier. So I guess that would be 31.
Yep.
We see the rocket crashing to Earth, landing, and then we see the Kents find him, and then it's not 38, it's 56, no, it's 86, it's a different rocket, it's a different Clark, it's a different, Kents. You know, we're seeing the retooling of the origin happen, two or three times here.
Yeah, over and over in a different year and a different, the way it happens is completely different. So it's bizarre, it just keeps happening over and over.
And there's reference of an outside force by Manhattan shifting Superman's arrival forward in time.
Yes.
And then when we get to the then current Clark, you know, basically freaking out when his parents say, yeah, you're a space alien, which is an understandable reaction.
Yeah.
Jonathan Kent, basically, it's like, hey, you are my son. You're not crazy and all this stuff, and it is comforting him.
Good father.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan Kent usually is.
Yes, he's a good guy.
But then we cut forward in time to Jonathan dying. Then we cut to the John Byrne Man of Steel era where the Kents live and help him become Superman, and he dies later. So again, we're seeing the timeline just shifting around the different reboots of Superman they've done over the years.
Yeah, it just keeps bouncing, and exactly, they're trying to show all these different things that have happened inside the DCU, but it's just bouncing around like a ping pong ball.
Yeah, and Manhattan is curious how this affects the future. Why can one man be so important? And on page 22, we get effectively the iconic original Superman or Superboy joining the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, so you go all the way out into the 31st century, 3000 whatever.
And this is when Cosmic Boy had the helmet, the original look of the costumes and such. So it's hard to tell if this is supposed to be the same Saturn Girl that we've had throughout this story or not, because, well, the timeline keeps changing.
Exactly. We don't know.
And Manhattan realizes that Superman's not just an inhabitant of this universe, but he's a linchpin, keystone aspect of it.
Exactly. It's almost like Superman has to exist in every universe. I felt like as I was reading this, there's almost like a deification of Superman that's going on.
Kind of, sort of. It, I think, goes back to he was the first superhero and all else came from him, so let's put him in that position narratively.
Exactly. Almost like a creator, because he was created as the first superhero and all have spawned from him.
Yeah. And we get reference to external forces such as the Anti-Monitor and Extant as to what's changing the timeline.
Yep.
Anti-Monitor, of course, Crisis on Infinite Earths. Extant was Zero Hour. This is where Manhattan gets curious and says, hey, let's see what I can do. He moves the lantern. That gets rid of Alan Scott becoming the Golden Age Green Lantern. Suddenly Superman doesn't exist as Superboy, you know, and we see the ramifications reacting not just to this world, but the entire local multiverse.
Exactly. The multiverse, it's reacting. And then he's saying this is the metaverse where he is actually changing and creating the different multiverses.
And it's the linchpin of the JSA changing Superman, changing the future and stuff. And the whole concept of the metaverse, I kind of like, kind of don't like.
Yeah, I didn't know what the... I'm like, okay, it's becoming a little bit more convoluted. I like the multiverse. Now you're adding a metaverse on top of it. I think it's a little bit too much. So I didn't care for it.
It's explaining away what had happened in the publishing history of DC and saying that this one universe, you change it and you're changing everything around it by nature of it.
Exactly. So it's a way to explain away a lot of continuity snafus and things like that, where, yeah, that did happen, but there was a switch in the metaverse that changed the multiverse.
Yeah, and then after Manhattan has made his changes, we see Kal-El rocketing out of the exploding planet of Krypton, back to Earth, all that kind of stuff, ending with the Kents dying on the night of Clark's high school prom.
Yeah, it's a very creative way of explaining away all the snafus.
It is, and it's similar to Hypertime, which I think was introduced, was that in Zero Hour, or where was that?
I think you mentioned it before it was in Zero Hour. I haven't read it myself.
Yeah, at some point we'll get to Zero Hour and stuff. Hypertime was another way to explain away continuity mistakes.
Okay.
Which you need an explanation for, because they're going to happen.
Yeah.
By page 25, we get how Clark grows up without the Legion, without the parents, becomes more distant. We get the New 52 Superman first with the t-shirt, then with the armor, and how that in turn reverberates around the multiverse. But then we go to, I guess, a year ago, which story-wise may be true, but publishing-wise not so much, and we see Manhattan encountering the Wally West Kid Flash from the DC Universe Rebirth special.
Yep, I remember that.
And did we get Manhattan in that special? It's been long enough since I've read it, I don't remember.
I don't remember either. I really can't. I think we did, but I'm not positive.
I remember we got Wally. I know we got mention of other stuff happening, but I don't know if we got... I don't know if we clearly saw Manhattan or just got the implication it might have been him.
Yeah.
I'd have to go check. But this is on the next page where we first see Manhattan seeing Superman lunging at him, fist extended, and wondering, does Superman destroy him or does he destroy the metaverse?
Yeah. Is it all gone?
Yeah. And then we're at, I guess, Carver's home... wondering, you know, what Manhattan's doing there, because normally they meet over at the bar, or the diner, I mean.
Exactly. Here you are in my living room. What's going on?
And we get some odd cuts between what's happening there right before Carver dies and the movie.
Yeah, I didn't understand what I was supposed to be getting out of that, but I don't know the impact of that other than showing he died and there was a gunshot in the movie. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I mean, dramatic effect.
Whatever the intent of the movie was, it didn't land for me. It kind of failed.
Yeah, it left me feeling like, okay, this didn't land because I don't see the meaning there. I mean, maybe I'm too dense for it, but I just did not see it.
I can see some parallels, but I don't get the meaning.
Yeah, exactly. There's parallels. There's a gunshot. The character dies. He dies, but that's it.
Yeah.
So, okay, whatever.
And then on page 28, the final page of this one, he's talking about how it's May 1971, presumably in the Watchmen world, where he's ended the war in Vietnam. Then he's, you know, finding Carver in 1938 in the DC Universe, watching his mother kill him. We're cutting towards Superman at the Hall of Justice. And we're also talking about how Manhattan is realizing he's a man of inaction, on a collision course with Superman, a man of action, and how in this world he's become the villain.
Yeah, I did like that, you know, on a collision course with a man of action with Superman and he's in action. So I thought that was kind of cool. But yeah, he's become the villain here, which is interesting.
It is. It is. This felt like a Watchmen kind of 2.0 issue for me with the backstory of Manhattan and Carver Coleman here.
Yeah.
And this is Manhattan's backstory after Watchmen, of course. And it finally gives a little context to the focus on the Nathaniel Dusk movie because we finally meet the star of it, but not much.
Yeah, and it was seeded so much through all the other books. I mean, it felt like it had such a little implication on the story. It's basically he's the grounding piece, the linchpin that he just needed to focus on to be able to alter this, you know, metaverse that we're living in. But it just seems like such a long wasted. There's so much wasted in the comics going back to the movie over and over and over again.
Well, and it took to the 10th issue to even connect it to the story.
Yeah, it seems like this whole thing moved at a snail's pace that here at the end, it seems to almost, especially by issue 12, go into hyperspeed. We gotta really crank this out and tie up all these loose ends.
Well, yeah, because the no-shows in this issue, Black Adam and Wonder Woman at the United Nations from where the previous issue ended off, Firestorm, the Superman Theory plot line. I mean, there was a brief mention on Mars with Hal and stuff, but that's it. Didn't get anything with Lois Lane or Lex Luthor.
Nothing.
Didn't get anything with Mime and Marionette, who had absconded with the Lantern and the Comedian last issue.
Yep.
Or the issue before, I forget when. Nothing with New Rorschach, nothing with the Comedian, nothing with Batman. Nothing with the present-day Superman other than this last page of him waking up. I mean, we get him in flashback and stuff, but it's not like the current Superman is participating in this story. It's also not even like the present-day version of Johnny Thunder, the 102-year-old guy, is in the story. We get the younger version in a cameo. And in the JSA scene, but I mean, there's so much going on that an issue of this series can't really touch on all of them, but for so many plot lines to just not move forward at all.
Again, not at all, and we've had so much story, so many pages of story, I should say, that it feels like it could have progressed a lot better than what we ended up with.
Yeah, I still go back to wondering if there's a remastering of this to be had that could have put all these things into a better flow.
Yeah.
Because I don't think any of the individual scenes are particularly bad or anything. I'm enjoying quite a few of them. But the pace at which it was released, and again, you end on a cliffhanger and then the next issue ignores it entirely.
Yeah, we need this to be remastered. Almost like the Snyder Cut that's coming out of the Justice League.
yeah. So
I left this issue, I'm like, it's good, it's cool stuff, but at the same time, feeling frustrated.
Yeah. It was good. I think that's the way to put it. You're right. It's got some good stuff, but it's a frustrating read because it's like, when are we going to come back to some of this?
Yeah, I want to see resolution. I want to see some stuff move forward. I don't like also that the issues were spaced out so far apart that it's almost like alternating. I'm going to leave off with, let's say Lex Luthor and Lois and whatever's going on here, but I'm not going to touch on it until, you know, two issues from now, which is actually going to be 6 months from now. And that was too far apart. And then I forgot what was going on. So, I mean, even reading it now, it's weird the way it was paced and, you know, how he laid the story out.
That was exactly what I was going to say, because we've been reading three issues every other week and it still feels like forever ago since we got to certain plot threads.
It really does. And I'm like, man, that's kind of eye opening because we didn't spread it out over 2 years. So, and I still have the same feeling.
Yeah, we spread it out over, maybe 2 months.
Yeah, that's it.
So, shall we jump into, number 11?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, we start with Batman, assaulting some military guys at some kind of launch control base.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure where, when, or why. Last we saw Batman, which was on page 29 of issue 9, 26 weeks earlier, publishing-wise, he was in the Batcave and his message had failed to send to Mars.
Yeah, he sat there waiting, message failed, and he looked all depressed.
And as far as I can try, he never he never tried to resend.
And now he's beating the hell out of people. Maybe this is the frustration because the message didn't go through.
I guess. We do get some footage of a gang war between Joker and two unknown players in Metropolis.
Yeah.
So apparently that's Mime and Marionette.
Yep.
We then go back to having some captions from, I guess, the journal of the original Rorschach. It becomes clear later, maybe?
Yeah.
Next page, we've got Alfred actually reading through the journal, finally?
Yeah, he's reading through and then finds out, huh, this guy's important. He's not full of it.
Yeah. What I found interesting on that second page is we've got that cliche scene of the appliance store getting looted through the broken window, and the TVs are, of course, still blaring away and stuff, including the one that's in somebody's hands being carted off.
That's funny. I didn't even think about it. I guess he left it plugged in before he stole it.
And these are tube TVs because they got some depth to it. They're not even modern-day flat screens.
Which means they're heavy.
So the whole thing was just kind of weird.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
We've also got Ozzy back at his place watching all the stuff on TV because he's not going to do much other than just watch TV.
That's what he does in every issue, just sit there and watch his TV.
Pretty much. And I couldn't tell why Batman was going after the launch control stuff here. Are we that close to missiles being launched or something? It feels like I missed something.
I know. All of a sudden, he went from trying to send the message to a big battle, and we don't know why or how. It's bizarre.
Now, he had time to get from the Batcave to wherever he got to.
Yeah, we just don't know why.
Meanwhile, after we saw him in the Batcave, I guess, was when we saw Black Adam show up at the UN.
Yep.
And that fight's still going on with Wonder Woman on page 3.
Yeah, so this is a fight that's gone on for a while. But the thing that I did not like about this fight, it seemed like we're kind of like viewing a... We saw one panel of it, one little clip, and then it seems like we're taken out of the fight.
We get the one page, and then, yeah, it's now footage of Black Adam, you know, talking about stuff. And we're now, I guess, in the Situation Room somewhere for the U.S. government, and they're somehow tracking metahumans.
Yeah, it's almost like me thinking, okay, and maybe I'm a little bit shallow, but you're building up and you had this big thing where Black Adam and all these baddies are coming in and Wonder Woman's facing off against them. That I want to see the action sequence. I want to see what happened, the fight. But, you know, you're relegated to just one page and you see one little snippet and then you move on.
It does feel like we're following the wrong camera crew.
It really does. We're following the camera crew that just wants to film the most boring parts of the story.
We're getting the B-roll, not the A-roll or something.
Yeah, these are all the deleted scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, there was some of that. It didn't make sense. You know, the whole bit about, are the Amazons going to come? Well, we may go get Diana, but we're not going to fight Black Adam because that's not our way. It's like, really?
Yeah.
And it felt like some of this was literally just being told to us by various people that we don't even get to see clearly who's speaking. So that was annoying. We've got the huge mob scene in front of the Hall of Justice again.
We want Superman. You know, we're upset.
And the footage is a little confusing because we're seeing Superman and Firestorm still in Russia. I guess that's a replay?
It has to be because that's not what's going on now. And we're watching it on TV again. So if this is real time, once again, we're watching real time on TV. But
the time flow on this gets really confused on this because we're now with Lex and Lois at LexCorp, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
And Lex is saying, a few weeks ago, he was approached by somebody claiming to be from another Earth and was shot by somebody from that same world.
Yeah.
Weeks ago?
It seems like this is all pretty recent. It shouldn't have been several weeks ago, according to the timeline that I've been reading.
It feels like a few days at most.
Yeah, exactly.
If the events of all this didn't fit into a 4-day weekend, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, this is just, I agree with you there because I've been reading it and there's nothing that moved the story forward to make it feel like this happened over weeks and weeks and weeks. Even though it was a slog at times, it felt like this is over a few days. The characters came in from the other universe, boom, interaction, stuff happens. Weeks have not passed.
I'd have to go back through the story to see if there's an indication of when we hit a nighttime and a new morning, because we did have a couple of different days go on. One day Rorschach was left at Arkham, another day he was visited by the Doctor, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So maybe it's more than the couple of days I was originally thinking.
That I felt like you did, that it's only been a few days, though.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. But this is where we start to find out that Lex knows a lot more than he's been saying.
Yes.
We then get Superman waking up, wondering why Lois isn't there. a gratuitous shot of the Daily Planet, because sure, why not? And Perry saying, yep, I don't want any of you reporters to go out on the street and, you know, gather the news. It's dangerous out there. That just felt wrong.
Yeah.
You know, let's cut over to Gotham, because sure, why not?
Riots on the street.
Yeah. And it didn't even look like anyone in particular was there, just a nameless mob.
Yeah.
And we're starting to see Superman, you know, off the bed or whatever. And then we get another page of predominantly news footage.
Yeah, once again, watching TV.
You know, we've got some stuff that happened over in the Ginza Pyramids. I don't remember when that happened, but okay. Maybe that was the fight with Superman and... Well, actually, Superman and Black Adam didn't fight.
They didn't. We didn't see them fight.
Did we see any fight over in Khandaq?
Nothing. We saw them fly over there and say, basically, stay here in your little town or your little country and don't come out. And that was it.
So I'm not sure what happened to the pyramids.
Yeah, somehow they're smoking now. But see, all these TV screens, and then you see the cat in the middle, so you're just like, Ozzy's just literally watching this. We're just watching all the TV shows he's watching.
Yeah, yeah. And we're getting some stuff of, hey, there's arson at the Flash Museum, as well as the Planet Krypton metahuman restaurant chain, which I think was from the Kingdom sequel to Kingdom Come.
Yep.
But then we also get Saturn Girl, and it's hard to tell, is she talking to Ozzy, is she thinking to him, or quite what's going on there?
Yeah, that I'm not sure. Your guess is as good as mine. Because she could be talking to him, we just don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Because she says a world, and then he literally says it. Was he responding to her? We just don't know.
I'm assuming so, but I couldn't tell where he was versus where her cell was, and where any of this really is for some of it.
Yeah. I don't know how he watches 37 TV shows at the same time.
He's the smartest man in his world.
Yeah, that's true. It would still drive me nuts.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, one of them's broken, one of them doesn't have a signal, and how he's tapping into not only television footage, but security cam stuff across the world, I don't know.
Yeah.
But then we get some stuff where he's essentially, the what are you planning this time, has the little spiky things around the balloon. To me, that's her thinking to him.
Okay.
Why we've got this thing about a town that's flooding and the guy who never left is going to drown because of it, don't know, don't care.
Yeah, that's the way I felt, didn't care.
But then Saturn Girl starts talking to Ozzy and stuff, and then, of course, we flip pages and we're totally somewhere else.
Yeah, and then, boom, off to the next thing.
Yeah.
We're back to Lois and Luther just walking around.
The cross-cutting gets a little annoying.
I agree.
Lex is taking Lois into one of his private vaults and showing her something, which is essentially the photo we've been seeing, and asking if she's ever heard of Carver Coleman.
Yeah.
And she knows he's an actor, but that's about it. And he died in 1954 and the case was never solved.
Yeah. And then that's, you know, after reading this, when we went back and we were going through the thing, that's when you start picking up on the, oh, that's why all these little pictures were laying around everywhere. Okay, fine.
Well, and we find out that one of these, he was following abnormal chronal energy spikes as opposed to normal chronal energy spikes, okay? And he was apparently there when Wally and Barry reunited in the Rebirth special.
Yeah.
And seemed to understand what was going on, which was kind of weird.
I would agree with you there. Very weird.
And we get mention of the chronal debris.
Yeah, which I'm assuming it was the photo.
Most of it was the photo. Some of it was items connected to Wally West. But most of it was the photos.
Yeah.
Because then we get the shot of all the different photos he'd seen, including one in the Congo days ago, which presumably was when Manhattan had gotten the Watchmen characters over there for the jungle scene.
Yeah.
He seems to know John's name is John. I don't know how he knows that.
That we are not told, but yeah, he knows he's John.
And that these are being created by somebody who doesn't realize they're doing it. So apparently, not only is Manhattan crazy powerful, he clearly doesn't have control over all of that power.
Which was bizarre to me. I found that a little bit odd. You know, he's creating these little photos, these artifacts, and has no clue that he's even doing that.
Does that not worry you a little?
It worries me a little bit.
So we then have Superman suiting up just in time for the military to essentially try to arrest him.
Yeah, which you're only going to arrest him if he wants to be arrested.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to know how they got into the Hall of Justice to do that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I didn't even think about that.
Those are just the sorts of things I wonder about. So as he's kind of leaving there, or about to go fly off, Ozymandias is asking Saturn Girl if Superman knows he exists and stuff like this, and kind of what's going on here. And leading up to, you know, hey, he's pitting Superman and Manhattan against each other. That seems to be his grand plan. You know, and that's, he's counting on Superman surviving because, well, that's what he does.
Correct.
If you're going to bet on somebody, Superman's not a bad one to bet on. I'll go with that.
I would agree.
We then cut to, for some reason, Rorschach's mask is in the kitchen at Wayne Manor as Alfred is making pancakes.
Once again, we're back to the pancakes, and it's a whole page of pancakes.
Yeah, this seemed to be... I think this entire page could have been skipped.
It really could have. I mean, I just don't get it. I mean, we understand he likes pancakes, but, I mean, to spend a whole page just showing a guy making pancakes, I mean, it doesn't even seem fun for the artist, I wouldn't think.
I wouldn't think, but who knows?
Who knows? Maybe he likes scene by scene, here's how you pour the batter, here's how the batter cooks. Yeah, who knows?
I think that page was done for the letterer.
Oh, the letterer. He wanted to get a page rate and not have to do anything.
He got the page off.
Yeah.
Next page, we've got the new Rorschach sleeping on the streets, apparently. It's funny, because he looks to be on the streets, but then he's in a cell, and then he's seeing his father going, I guess, to go talk to the original Rorschach. A blast of fire comes out, so he's having a nightmare, I guess.
Yeah.
And on the next page, out of that fire comes Mothman, who turns into a Rorschach image, and then the Rorschach mask. Rorschach's then grabbing the new Rorschach through the bars. It's all kind of surreal, at which point he's woken up by Alfred, who's come bearing pancakes.
I know, which is so bizarre. Hey, we were wrong about you. I come bringing gifts of pancakes, which, of course, he's livid at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Batman took him to Arkham and left him.
I know, and locked him up. Apparently now, if the timeline is correct, for weeks he's been locked up. And you're going to make it up by bringing a stack of pancakes, which are obviously cold at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like a good peace offering.
And then, of course, runs off.
Yeah, off into the crowd.
At this point, we cut to presumably Gotham because we've got Mime and Marionette jumping off a fire escape for some reason.
Yeah, I didn't understand why they were doing that, but they're using their weapons and cutting people up.
Yeah, I did think it was a little weird that Mime seemed to be holding something, and when he dropped it, Comedian dropped from above. So was he in, like, an invisible bag that he wasn't touching? I mean, I'm growing more confused about Mime's powers.
Yeah, we don't know.
And then we get some backstory around John having been responsible for Mime and Marionette's incarceration, but not sparing them because she was pregnant, but because she knew that the boy would bring joy to somebody who was close to him, and that's the Mrs. Hollis that's referenced there, which is, I believe, the second Silk Spectre under a new assumed name as of the end of Watchmen.
Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha.
But I had to do a little Googling to piece that together.
Oh, okay. I was like, I didn't get that. I just kind of went with it. But it was kind of interesting that he's like, but you had another kid on the way, and they kind of just give up on the kid. They're like, oh, okay.
Well, Ozymandias points out that it wasn't that she was pregnant, because he's watched, you know, the Comedian shoot a pregnant woman and did nothing. So it's not the kid.
Very true.
I mean, I don't recall that scene of Watchmen, but okay, it happened, sure, whatever. And again, part of this just gets a little confusing and convoluted as to his master plan. And he's explaining, and to me this is the parlor scene in a classic mystery where, you know, you gather everyone together and explain how the butler did it. And there's a part of me wondering, there was a butler in this story? You know,
yeah, exactly.
Because we're getting the Ozymandias really just doing the villain soliloquy here of, yeah, Reggie thought Rorschach was a friend of his father. It wasn't. I thought it set him up this way, let him think I had, you know, cancer, do the whole, you know, turn the owl ship into the time spheres, as I guess. It's hard to tell who was speaking at that point. I guess that would have been Saturn Girl.
I guess so. I didn't know who was speaking, honestly. But yeah, it was just, yeah, it's all laid out there.
But, you know, how they escaped, you know, rocketed from their doomed world, this time in the owl ship instead of from Krypton, but same idea.
Yeah, same thing.
So all of this was to manipulate various people, because that's what Ozymandias does. And then we get a gratuitous, almost splash page, really just the top two-thirds.
Yeah, like a two-thirds splash. Yeah, I agree.
Of just the various heroes and stuff of the DC Universe, the world is full of hope and despair. And how he was basically just puzzled by the DC Universe.
Yeah, I agree.
Which I can understand.
Yes.
Ozzy then says, hey, I came up with a new plan to save both worlds. Okay, this is recapping what had happened a few issues back, but great. And this is where he starts to explain he was behind turning the world against Superman. The Superman theory was already there. He just kind of, you know, found out it was true, put some pressure on Ronnie Raymond and Firestorm, explaining the media interviews we've been seeing in early issues, and basically setting the whole thing up using the cloned cat or whatever to trigger the turning people to glass stuff, figuring when the energy was traced, it wouldn't come back to the cat, but to the bigger source of it was Manhattan over on Mars.
Exactly. So Ozzy laid out his whole evil plan here.
And it seemed kind of convoluted and just happened to work.
Yeah, I agree. It was like, oh, okay. And really, if I go back, I mean, if you went back reading that again, I wouldn't have picked up that he was involved in any way.
When I first...
There's no clues there, I don't think.
No. And when I first read it, I'm like, how is he... The Superman theory predated him.
Yep.
You know? So I would have to, having reread this, reread the earlier stuff, to see if it really makes sense or not. And if you could kind of read in between the lines and knowing that happened, and then if there's any clues to indicate that it was happening.
Yeah. But after rereading this, I don't want to go back and reread it again.
That was my conclusion as well.
Sorry. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. We then get the Oval Office. They're trying to get the president out, and it's not safe outside because, well, there's Black Adam and his group.
Yeah, his cronies.
And we've got, let's see, Giganta, we've got Creeper, somebody in red and yellow that I don't have enough clues to make out, somebody next to them, Killer Frost, we've got Man-Bat up there. Other side of Black Adam, we've got a Manhunter, which is the robotic one, not sure why he's hanging with him, but okay. Somebody else I couldn't quite tell who was, and then it looked like maybe Lady Clayface and either Clayface or maybe the computer genie thing that we'd had referenced in an earlier issue. It seemed like an odd selection.
Yeah, he almost looked like that one green guy looked like the lizard from Spider-Man almost. Or,
Scorpion, you know, actually.
Scorpion, I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I couldn't tell who he was supposed to be.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird.
It's definitely got a tail, but yeah, and I feel like I should know who the yellow and red one next to the Creeper is, but there's just so little to base it on.
Nothing distinguishing about him.
Yeah. And Black Adam's basically, you know, hey, all the metahumans can join me, I will save them, and then thump, in comes Superman saying, you know, hey, let's put a stop to this.
Yeah, this isn't gonna happen.
And at this point, we cut back to Ozzy asking Saturn Girl, like, I've seen the future, it exists because of Superman, and he's like, yeah, but does Superman remember you?
It's true. Does he know who you are?
And she's realizing, no, he doesn't. And then on the next page, she's fading to dust.
Yeah, she's literally disappearing.
Did you notice her flight ring did not?
I did notice that. I mean, because you got the panel there even showing it, but I don't know what the flight ring stayed there.
I'm unclear why. If it's her flight ring, and we saw it in the evidence bag or whatever that they'd taken out of Arkham, implying it was hers, why did it stay?
That's what I don't know. Is the implication that it's not the real Saturn Girl? I don't know why.
Well, the implication to here is her timeline no longer exists.
But the ring shouldn't exist then either.
Even if it did, because you could argue that they have rings in the Bendis Legion.
True.
How would she have gotten one of those rings?
Yeah, so that's confusing. I didn't know why that didn't go away either.
The only other possibility I could think of is there was reference to Pharaoh-Lad's ring in an earlier issue, but it didn't seem like that's the ring she had.
Huh.
So I did not know what to make of this. I do recall when I read this, I was unamused, because this character we've been following throughout most of the story is like, yeah, you don't matter, go away.
Exactly. It's like, what was the point of her being here this entire time?
Don't know.
Yeah,
to show the ramifications Superman had in the future.
Yeah, I guess that's it. Just building up to this, she's disappearing. So, but
well, I think if Bendis' Legion hadn't come around, she would have basically gotten the Legion into the story that way. But yeah. She's representing the future Superman sets up. Johnny's representing the past that led into Superman.
Yeah.
Now, did you notice at the end of this page, we got the lantern here?
I did notice that.
But Mime and Marionette took it.
Now that you say that, I remember, why did they leave him the lantern? They did take it. It shouldn't be here.
The last we saw was page 24 of issue 7, which admittedly was released 49 weeks earlier.
A long time.
So, depending when things were written and stuff, maybe Johns just forgot.
Yeah.
But that's something the editor should have caught.
I agree.
So, to me, that's a problem. Not an insurmountable one, but it annoys me.
It's a miss by the editing team, for sure.
Yeah. We then have, on page 27, Superman getting knocked down Pennsylvania Avenue, presumably by Black Adam, because not many other people there could do it. And we then cut to the police in Gotham chasing Mime, Marionette, and comedian in a convertible as they just happen to go by Rorschach.
Yeah, and there's a countdown that happens there.
Because it's 6 seconds to Superman seeing Manhattan. Finally, at the end of issue 11, we get the first real face-off between those two that arguably the series have been building up since the beginning. And then it's, you know, is the world going to survive?
Yeah. So this is what we built up for, the face-off between Dr. Manhattan and Superman.
And I really think we built up to it fairly late in the game.
I agree. Here we are, issue 11. So going into it, you figure this entire issue, first of all, there's tons of loose threads again. Things have not been tied up. And I'm figuring, man, it's going to be a big, you know, face-off between these two characters. And it kind of happens and kind of doesn't.
I felt most of this issue was a massive info dump, some by Lex, most by Ozzy, explaining what had really been happening in the series so far.
They almost had to tell us what was going on, because if they didn't have that scene with, you know, like Lex explaining things, we wouldn't know what was going on. If they didn't have the thing with Ozzy, you know, him setting up the entire plan, we had no clue why that happened, why, you know, he lost control of his powers and people turned to glass. So literally it was info dumps telling you, here's what you missed, but there's no clue to how you missed it.
Yeah. What's also a little puzzling is, did you notice the street sign at the top of that page?
Oh, I didn't.
Sure looks like it says Luthor.
Yeah, it does.
Don't know what's up with that.
Yeah, Luthor Street.
So, this issue's had its moments, but again, info dump, some of this should have been set up way earlier, and I think some of Ozzy's plan was a little lucky to pull together, and it didn't seem foreshadowed from what had happened before.
I would agree.
Shall we move on to the final issue of this never-ending saga?
I like how you phrase that. Yeah, let's do that.
So, we ended with the two facing off, so of course we're kind of not going to start there. We sort of do, because we've got the Superman emblem, we've got Manhattan's face, so I guess we've restarted with a really poor establishing shot. Suddenly we're back at flashing back to Manhattan's actual origin in the test chamber as he's accidentally locked in there and about to become Manhattan. And then we flash a month earlier to the actual taking of that photograph we keep seeing. And this may be one of the first times that we get Janie's name in this.
I believe so.
Because I was trying to remember every time I was referencing that photo. Is it his wife, his girlfriend, what is it? And here they're just friends dating, and I don't think they ever do marry. Well, it becomes Manhattan, and then ceases to care about such things.
Exactly.
So we're getting some of his backstory here and such, because, well, you know, we need it. Then page two, we actually are back to where we left off on the previous issue. This is probably the fewest pages between a end of issue and picking back up with that thread.
Exactly. When this issue first started off, I was kind of frustrated. It's like, man, they're going to leave us off on when they first meet, and then we're not going to deal with it. And I was happy that when I went to wait page two, I'm like, huh, here we go.
Well, let's face it, they couldn't put it off for another issue or two.
Yeah, he would have if he could.
I think so. And nice to see the two actually start talking instead of just slugging each other.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, in comes the Russians People's Heroes and the Markovian Outsiders. Because, you know, hey, lives were lost in Moscow. Superman, you've got to do the right thing. Come with us. And I'm sorry. A Russian firestorm and Geo Force, I don't care what backup they've got. They're not the ones who are going to go pull, you know, Superman and such.
I know. It's like, no chance. It isn't happening.
What's interesting is a few of the people they've got with them don't make sense to me.
Okay.
I don't know if we've established that Tara is alive. I don't know if she's alive, dead, or whatnot in this continuity, but hey, continuity's changed just in this series a few times. Hell, just in the last issue a few times.
Yeah.
But the bigger one is between Pozar and Geo-Force, it looks like the Azrael Batman.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That feels out of place.
Yeah, why is he there?
There was a Batman associated with the Outsiders, but don't know.
It does seem out of place, so.
And then there's also, the one I couldn't figure out why they kept using is it looks like the guy above and to the right, to the left of Pozar with the yellow mask or whatever.
Okay.
I forget his name, but I think it's one of the guys from the Others that Aquaman was hanging with.
Oh, all right.
It just seems like an arbitrary character to be using.
Just toss one in.
Although, it may have been a series that Geoff Johns wrote, so that might explain it.
Yeah, true.
So, at this point, you've got Black Adam's folks coming in, you've got all these international heroes, so what else is there going to be but a fight?
Yeah, they're all going to brawl with them right now.
And, of course, Manhattan's just going to sit and watch, because he's a man of inaction.
I know. For the action sequence, inaction.
We then cut to, I guess, news footage explaining how the knights from the UK are going to come in. We're going to have Australian heroes, the sleeping soldiers come in. We're going to have the Israeli Metahuman program come in. And we're going to have, as many international heroes that we've never seen and may never see again show up to, I guess, show up.
Yeah, I was like, who are all these people?
And do they matter at all? There's one or two that, I mean, it looked like, particularly the ones from Australia, they looked more like X-Men characters.
It does. I'm like, I've seen him in the recent X-Men books.
So, whatever. I don't know. And then we cut to the new Rorschach hanging outside of a barbershop for some unknown reason before he gets mugged.
Yeah.
And then we've got Alfred saving him from the mugging.
Yeah, Alfred, the pancake maker.
Does he still have the pancakes at this point?
No, he doesn't. They landed on the floor. I just called him the pancake maker.
you missed the opportunity for the pancakes. You know, you snooze, you lose.
It's true.
And then, you know, it doesn't go too well. I think Rorschach manhandles Alfred a little more than I think he should. Intercut with Superman getting, you know, beaten up.
Yeah, he's blasted in the head. Yep.
And of course, is this still at that barbershop?
I think so.
Yeah, because there's a ton of TVs still going in the barbershop.
Where we're getting all the information correct.
Because the barbershop isn't energy conscious enough to turn its TVs off.
When the shop's closed, we leave our TVs on.
on the 24-hour news channel.
Exactly. Makes no sense.
Well, maybe it would have shown the movie if it had been on, but hey, there's news, so we'll show that.
If they would have shown the movie, I would have been really upset at this point. Oh, gosh.
Same here. We then get a two-page splash.
Yeah, which I was like, wow, okay, so this is the artist, the gratuitous artist thing. But, I mean, it's kind of cool. I like this one. But it's a lot of pages for a splash.
It's a lot of obscure characters.
It is. I didn't know who anyone was, almost.
I could name a handful of them.
I know Giganta.
We got Giganta.
Who's the big silver guy with the big Japanese logo on him?
That one I'm not sure off the top of my head. I'd have to give that one some thought.
He's cool looking. I have no clue who he is.
We've got Rising Sun, I think it is. We've got, it looks
Black
like...
Adam.
Well, definitely Black Adam. We've got the guy from the Others. It looks like we've got the Green Lantern from the Just Imagine world, maybe, up in the upper right. We've got... Who else do we have recognizable?
There's just so many characters, and I didn't know who most of them were. I didn't know who any of them were, almost.
Yeah.
There's even a dinosaur. A purple dinosaur head right by Gigantus behind.
Yeah. And that's in front of what might be the Shining Knight?
Yeah, a ghost
rider.
Or the
Viking prince, maybe one of them, I don't know.
Yeah, right above the dinosaur, there's a ghost rider looking character, but it's almost like the, I don't know who these characters are.
I think that's Jack-O-Lantern, maybe?
Jack-O-Lantern, okay.
And that might be one of the Global Guardians.
Okay.
But then we've got the grasshopper, whatever, that I think only existed in Flashpoint. There's just so many obscure characters, and they really don't factor into the story at all.
They don't. They're just a bunch of throwaway characters.
So, okay, there's a big fight going on in DC. Got it. You know, don't know that it really added much to the story. And the part that got me is we don't even see Superman at all. It's just there's a fight going on, and I'm not sure who's on whose side.
Yeah, it's all these characters, and no teams established, and you don't have Dr. Manhattan, you don't have Superman, you don't have anyone. It just looks like Black Adam and his crew versus a bunch of good people from international countries.
Yeah.
Don't know why.
Yeah, couldn't tell you. Next page, we've got an extreme close-up on, I guess, the new Rorschach, intercut with Superman getting blasted, intercut with Johnny and the Lantern. Johnny's not looking too happy. He's still in his cell. We've got Ozzy, presumably still staring at the TVs. We've got that flight ring again.
Just sitting there, yep.
We've got people rushing out of some building. You know what? It's the Daily Planet.
Oh, yeah. Okay, it is the Daily Planet.
The caption is covering the name on the building, but between the planet above it and the what looks
it
like a D and
D.
An A and an E at the end, so yeah. Wow, that was poor placement of the... Well, I don't know where else they could have put the caption, though.
Yeah, all right.
They could have actually done it as half as wide, twice as tall, down on the left above the other caption.
Yeah, they could have.
So Superman's still fighting, and then...
He's fighting the sand guy from that we saw earlier in Kandak.
Yeah. Oh, that's who it is. You're right. It is
the one
sandstorm.
That was like a little... Yeah, the little kid was inside of it.
And he's fighting the kid.
Yeah, which was weird. I thought that was weird, because he knows it's a little boy.
Yeah, it doesn't seem right. That's why Lois is so horrified in the next panel.
I guess so.
Because, of course, Lex has nothing but TVs on, presumably still in his vault.
Yeah, everyone gets all their information from TV here in this planet, and they're all on 24/7.
Yeah. We then have back at Rorschach and Alfred, Batman, I guess, coming down from the Batplane or something to apologize.
Yeah.
Nice shot, but this whole thing seemed a little slow given how chaotic the last few pages have been.
Yeah, that's a big intro to just jump down and say, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got it kind of weird.
We then see Manhattan just walking around, watching the fight.
Yeah, literally a man of inaction. He does nothing.
We then have a car hurtling towards a dumpster where a mother and child are hiding from all this chaos, and Superman catches the thing while Manhattan just kind of watches.
And Superman starts looking at Manhattan at that time and be like, are you going to help the people?
Yeah, whoever you are, do something.
And his response was kind of hilarious to me. Dark Humor, I don't help you.
Yeah, it's already happened in his mind.
Yeah.
And Superman's like, I can't do this alone. And this whole time, nobody else has helped Superman. Now, granted, a lot of the heroes are off-planet, but surely not all of them. Now, I guess that's why all the international ones have shown up.
Yeah, they're all brawling, and Superman's the only one trying to save people.
Which is interesting, because I thought there was a reference later of Superman fighting alone. I'm pretty sure there is, actually.
Yeah.
We'll get to that when we get to it.
You get another nude scene there, Dr. Manhattan in the middle, at the bottom.
Yeah. Again, why they didn't go with the shorts he normally wore, don't know. And then we get a quick cut to the Institute for Spatial Studies, or whatever it was, on the Watchmen world. Maybe? I don't know, because there's a lightning bolt there. Maybe that's not... I don't know what that is. It seemed like a reference to the alien event stuff from Watchmen.
Okay, yeah.
And then we've got Lex basically showing Lois the way out, saying, hey, go write your article so I can get credit for having figured all this wonderful stuff out.
Yeah. Now, if you excuse me, I'm going to grab this vibrational emitter.
Yeah, which is a handy thing to just happen to have lying around.
That's what I thought. I was like... First, I'm like, why are we being shown this? And then later on, I'm like, okay, that was kind of convenient.
It would have been nice to know how and why he got it, if there was some backstory to it, if it's connected to the Flash or what.
Yeah. My thought is we'll never know.
Yes. I think there's a lot in this issue that fall into that category.
Yeah. Stuff happened in here, and it's just going to be lost to time. We'll never know.
Yeah. We then, on page 15, have Marionette and Mime with the comedian still just driving all over Gotham.
Yeah.
And it looks like, actually, it was the Batcopter Batman came out of, and they sail right past the Batman and stuff, and they don't even notice.
I know. That was kind of funny. They had him drugged and, you know, taken all over town. He didn't even notice.
Just the car and the cops driving by, you would think would get attention.
Exactly. Something. But no, they're on a mission. They're going to find Rorschach.
Because they need him to save the day.
Exactly.
We then cut back to Superman and Manhattan talking again. How can you stand there and do nothing? And Manhattan fesses up. He's the one who changed Superman's life. Responsible for the death of his parents, loss of mentors he never knew he had, etc. Are you going to destroy me?
Yeah, which that's pretty cruel.
Yeah, and then we get what's supposed to be the pivotal moment of Superman, eyes glowing red as if the heat vision's about to kick in, charging towards Manhattan, whose eyes are closed and therefore shouldn't be seeing anything, and we see the fist flying forward.
Yeah, he's going to knock his head off at this point.
And this is the image we'd seen last issue.
Yeah, correct. And so I was like, here we go, the fight's starting.
And then at this point, instead of hitting Manhattan, he hits Pozar, who I guess was just behind Manhattan unnoticed. I couldn't tell quite what the deal was there.
Yeah, me neither. So he kind of knocks out Pozar, and then the eyes go back to normal, which means maybe when he was staring at him, it was the flames we saw reflecting.
I don't think so. I took it as a heat vision thing, but it's hard to know.
That's what I did, too. Yeah, and then I was like, because he looks really angry with those red eyes. I thought it was like, you know, getting ready to shoot him with heat vision. But I don't know if we're supposed to take that as, oh, it wasn't even heat vision after all. He was in control. He was knocking out this other guy, and that was just a reflection. Who knows?
Could be.
Yeah, I don't know.
I didn't think Superman's eyes were that reflective.
Yeah, that's true.
We then have Superman saying, hey, you're talking about me destroying you, or you destroying me. Maybe there's a third choice.
Yeah. So, okay. So at this point, it's like, okay, 12 issues we've built up to this show, you know, the standing off these two mega characters from the Watchmen world and the DCU, and basically they're going to talk it out.
Well, Superman then asks, who is she, and references the photos.
Yeah.
Which apparently is the first time Manhattan realizes he's creating them.
Yeah, so he's been dropping them and doesn't even see them, which I'm like, I don't know where they're coming from. You know, are they dropping off his body somewhere? I don't know, but yeah, he was clueless to him, which was just bizarre to me.
Yeah, so we get a really quick flashback to his origin, and that this is Superman's way to connect with him.
Yeah.
Now, at the bottom of the page, we got Reggie putting the Rorschach mask back on as Alfred and Batman are casting fairly gratuitous shadows.
Yeah, I would agree.
I couldn't tell quite where that light was supposed to be coming from. At this point, the fight then reemerges around Superman, and Manhattan just kind of does stuff.
Yeah, he raises his hands, and everything kind of freezes and dissipates.
We get the ominous, everything ends.
And then it ends, and then this is, they actually hired me, DC did. Page 22, I was the fill-in artist.
You did some great work. I was the fill-in letterer.
And then I also stepped in on page 23.
I do want to talk about 21 for just a second.
Yeah, sure.
We get Lex and Lois. We get Mime and Marionette. We get Alfred, Batman, Rorschach. We get Johnny Thunder. We get Ozymandias. We get, Superman. As we start to fade, and the last thing we see is the Superman S.
Yeah, and it's the last thing you see, and it starts to dissipate.
Everything goes to black. Page 22, all black. 23, all black, but now a 9-panel grid. Gotta give the shout-out to Watchmen there.
It's and not, then a rebirth.
It's not all black. Oh. We get some splashes of white every once in a while, some specks.
Yeah, little specks.
And then we kick into, you know, the exploding Krypton and the rocketing to Earth.
Yep. We're back to the origin of Superman.
And it's interesting because on page 25, as we start to see that ship get to Earth, it lands near a volcano. It lands in, I don't know, palm tree area and farming area and near some Neanderthals and the Ice Age and then by the Kents. So we're seeing it play out over different iterations.
Yeah, over thousands or maybe millions of years. It's weird.
That the Golden Age may not have been the first go-round on this.
Exactly. Superman has always been, will always be.
And we've got Jonathan Kent, as he's dropping Clark off to the prom, saying, hey, if they've never seen anything like you, they're going to be afraid. The lantern is out of reach of Alan Scott. It gets moved back. Now suddenly Jonathan Kent saying, hey, I heard about the JSA. Maybe the world is ready for you.
Yeah.
That makes enough of a difference that Superboy saves the Kents.
Which was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
And at that point, kind of implies Superman's or Superboy's back in continuity, as is the Legion there on page 27, because the JSA is there.
Yep.
And that, well, the Kents survive.
Yeah, so everything's coming into continuity here, and everything's reappearing. And that did kind of happen in the DCU, so there it is.
It's kind of weird, though, because we're seeing Superman as a boy, as Superboy, and we're seeing what looks like the Supergirl we just lost last issue.
Yeah, which was kind of weird.
And then we get, as the metaverse reform, time catches up. It's like, I don't know quite what that means.
I don't know. I guess time catches up to... I don't know. I honestly don't know either. So everything happened. Everything was fine. What we saw, it just explained it all.
Well, we then get back to Ozzy and stuff, and he realizes something has happened. The flight ring glows bright. Johnny hears something. I don't know if it's the voice from the lantern, if it's Saturn Girl or what, but he gets reminded he became the Thunderbolt.
Yep.
And then he almost seems to start to fade away as he says his magic word.
Yes, he does.
And then Ozzy's like, what's going on with the ring and the old man, and what is Manhattan doing?
Yeah, he's disappointed at that time. Plans foiled.
And we're back to Superman getting attacked from all corners as a telepathic push comes to help, and he realizes Saturn Girl is there, that the JSA is there, and that suddenly we get this nice two-page splash of the Bendis Legion and I think the Geoff Johns JSA rallying behind Superman.
Yeah, so you got them all. That's a really cool splash.
It is. And I somewhere around here, there had been a reference to Superman still fighting alone. Where was that?
I'm not sure. I remember reading it, but I don't
know.
It's
in here somewhere. Who cares?
Somewhere. Exactly.
He's not alone anymore. We've got a couple of different teams.
He's got everyone with him. Not everyone, but a lot of people.
We've got the Thunderbolt blasting through Black Adam under the command of JJ. We've got Saturn Girl telling Soul Taker, reminding her, hey, don't kill anyone. I'm wondering if Soul Taker, that I don't recall seeing in the Bendis Legion just yet, if she's got Katana's sword.
I don't know. Yeah, quite possibly.
So we're seeing some cool stuff there. And then on page 33, this is where the story just kicks into a high gear.
I would agree. Now it's like going really quick.
We stop doing story, we start doing meta story, I think.
Yeah, and this is where it got just kind of weird for me.
We've got the Golden Age Superman back on April 18th, 1938. We then have a panel referencing the Barry Allen origin, the birth of the Speed Force, rattling the metaverse, shifting Superman forward in time. We get the reality dividing, giving us the classic Earth 2 characters, it looks like. We've got the Crisis, Earth divides again. Earth 1 becomes Earth 1985, a world unexplored even today, implying if you wanted pre-crisis, non-crisis continuity kind of a thing, all those characters are out there to be had.
Yeah.
And that how everything exists, including the stuff that Manhattan had done. And I couldn't tell if the reference to after Flashpoint and Rebirth was Manhattan's changes or not. Presumably it was, and then we've got this Earth 52 still out there somewhere.
Yeah, Earth 52 is out there. And this is where later on it starts getting really trippy with this stuff, with how far out they're going.
Yeah, because on page 34, we get a reference to some other stuff happening in 2020, another crisis in 2025, with the Time Masters and stuff, some allies returning. The splash of characters we get is a mix of Justice Leaguers, a couple of some Titans, some Flash characters. It looks like a Turtle Girl over there.
Yeah.
We've got, it looks like Batwing up in the upper right. But what I found most interesting is with the Titans, we've got Donna Troy, we got Nightwing, we got Batgirl, and it looks like a Wonder Woman-ish character.
Yes, I would agree. I didn't know who that was, but I noticed her. I was like,
I don't think we're supposed to know who that is.
Huh.
We get reference to the timeline being restored in 2026 and Earth 5G being born.
Which we will never see.
Quite possibly. And then reference to a secret crisis in 2030 with Superman brawling with Thor and a green behemoth. So as
and if, I was like, oh, I'm sorry.
As if a DC Marvel crossover happens.
I want to see that. I got so excited. Like, hey, we're going to see the Hulk and Superman going at it. And Thor will be there. I'm like, that's so cool. That one got me Secret Wars and Crisis, Secret Crisis.
During the pandemic, there's been a lot of clamor for doing that sort of a story.
I know. I would have been so excited if they did that. If they would have rolled out of the gates, which, you know, when the comic shops first opened and they just said, hey, here's something that we're going to be doing, here's something, you would have had so many people buying those comics and just getting excited about the market again. I think it would have been so cool.
If they had had an idea of how long things were going to last and knew they would have the time to ramp up the story and could have all played nice together, doing something that not only was a Marvel-DC crossover but invited in as many of the indies and other publishers, they really could have had an interesting, you know, event come out of this.
Yeah, I got so excited when I read that. I'm like, that's what I want to see. I want to read that.
Mm-hmm. But then the next page is basically how in 2038, Superman appears for the same for the first time. And then again, that's when he lands on Earth. And then, you know, it happens again and again and again.
And it just keeps going. Yeah, it's like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, and we get reference of the media recognizing Wonder Woman and the JSA having fought together in World War II. The media seems to know the Legion of Superheroes by name. And at this point, Ozzy's saying, yep, I did it again. I've saved the world. Okay.
It's all gone according to plan.
Yeah, I love it when a plan comes together. It's a bit much.
I would agree. I don't think you're that smart, Ozzy.
I don't think so. And then he gets summoned by Manhattan and just kind of teleports away from Batman, although Rorschach goes with him.
Yeah.
And then we also see the car crash that Mime and Marionette were driving because he takes them and Comedian, and they're all meeting up at the Washington Monument for some crazy reason.
Yeah, no clue why it's there.
And you can see the lightning in the background, which presumably is still the fight Superman's having going on in the distance.
Yeah.
And Ozzy's like, hey, I've saved everybody. Let's go home and save that world, too. And then he gets shot.
I know. I was like, what the heck? And then he's out of his cuffs or his bindings.
Yeah, he's been shot by a Comedian.
Yeah.
And then somehow, even though last we saw Luthor, he was in Metropolis, he's now in DC firing that vibrational emitter thing at Comedian, who's morphing out of costume back into his bathrobe to wind up back in the Watchmen universe, falling out the window.
So going right back, falling to his death.
So all of this was just between floors, I guess, or I guess different stories of the building, between stories of Watchmen.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting, I thought.
Yeah. Rorschach decides to save Ozzy, even though he had manipulated him and gotten his father killed, etc., because he wants to see him rot in prison.
Yeah. I like want justice, and it basically sticks his finger in the wound, I think.
Wants to save him, doesn't want it to be painless.
Yeah, exactly.
What's interesting is Manhattan decides that Mime and Marionette are not going back. They're going to stay.
That was cool, because now I expect to see them.
Yeah, they're staying in the DC universe, and they need to be there as an anchor for their son. They will see him at some point. We then see a quick cut of Black Adam having been defeated. So we got Superman and the new Saturn Girl there. We then cut to the diner, and it's after the annual conversation with Carver, and he's like, he's not going to be here for now. What's going on? He comes back to explain himself. Manhattan does. And basically apologize. You should, you know, be who you are, own it, and I'm not going to be around, but you're going to be just fine. That, of course, changes Carver's timeline to coming out in front of the blackmail, not getting killed, becoming a spokesperson for, you know, homosexuality and the rights of all that, living into the early 2000s, and all is right in the world.
Yeah, everything's good now.
The Justice League comes back from Mars. The JSA says they're going to be investigating the Department of Many Human Affairs' involvement with the Superman theory. And we get in that last vertical panel on page 40... a ton of media sound bites that Superman's listening to as he's walking with Lois. Martin Stein's been arrested. There's mention of Ronnie Raymond, the other half of Firestorm, getting treated by the All-Star Clinic of Dr. Midnight's MetaHuman Medical Center. There's mention of the People's Heroes, Wonder Woman saying we ought to reform the Global Guardians, a bunch of other references to other nationalities. The one that was the most out of place was the next movie being shown after the adjournment marathon ended. And
yeah.
It's The Silver Blade starring Jonathan Lord. The Silver Blade was a 12-issue series from 1987, I think, in which the actor Jonathan Lord was able to transform into any of his many movie roles and possess their powers.
Ah, all right.
So, little Easter egg.
All right, there you go.
Doesn't really add anything to the story.
Just something.
Cool. Yeah. Page 41, we see the journal is now in the trophy case in the Batcave. We see that Mime and Marionette are taking residence in the Owl ship somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. We don't know where, because we still have not seen them in the DCU.
Yeah.
They're there, though.
Yeah, they're clearly there. Lex thinks that Ozzy had a good idea, not that he ever really heard the idea, but he can improve upon it. And then we basically have Lois and Clark heading to the Daily Planet and get surprised by the Kents, who got into town a little earlier than expected.
Everyone's happy. Everything's good.
Yeah. And I don't think we've seen the Kents since. Now, granted, we've only had about 3 months, 3.5 months worth of comics from DC since then.
Yeah.
We then cut over to the Watchmen world, which is a bit more dystopic after the missiles and stuff back in, I guess, the first issue?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
And as Manhattan's walking around, plants are regrowing, and he's repairing the world.
Yeah, he's going to heal everything.
We've got Rorschach at the grave of Byron, who is Mothman. He seems to be doing better. This is where we get the mention of Cleopatra Pak, who's a young orphan who becomes obsessed with the rise and fall of Ozymandias, who on her 16th birthday becomes Nostalgia with the fully grown cat with her. How she got the cat, I don't know. Who she is, I don't know.
Yeah, we have no clue. I want to know, but who knows?
Those two panels seem to come out of nowhere.
Yeah, and you think it must have some purpose or he wouldn't put it in there, but who knows?
Yeah, we then have Mime and Marionette getting ready to have their new kid, and what are they going to name her? Oh, we're going to go with Anita, who gets born 8 months from now. So maybe we're 5-6 months shy from when they show up.
Yeah.
Then we find out that the reason Manhattan couldn't tell what happened to the kid is he had later come and taken the kid and raised him. He realizes that his father was not the good influence that Jonathan Kent was for Clark. See, he wants to be that good influence for Mime and Marionette's son and then leave that kid his power.
Yeah, which is kind of cool, which would bring the power base that he has into the DC that we know in a new character.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't have a naked blue guy walking around.
Now, the middle row of panels on 44, it seems like wondering what his life would have been like had he not gone back for the watch, had he not become Manhattan.
Yeah, and he kind of, almost a smile, you know, like he looks back upon it and he thinks he would have been happier.
It seems though just like a daydream and a thought experiment, not something that actually happens.
Exactly. Yeah, him smiling and just thinking about what if.
And then he kind of fades away as the roses are regrowing. And then we wind up on page 45 at the Hollis residence. Again, I had to do some research to find out this seems to be, I think, Silk Spectre and Night Owl under new names. They've had a kid. It's years later. She answers the door. It's the son of Mime and Marionette. Sally, the daughter, offers pancakes because, well, why not? Everybody eats pancakes.
Yeah.
And then the last full page of art we get is the kid, which kind of looks a little like Mime, I guess, although he's got the Manhattan logo on his forehead.
Yeah, burned in.
With John Calls Me Clark.
Yeah, so he named his son after Clark Kent, huh?
Then the actual final page of the story is pretty much all black with a quote and the clock emblem.
Yeah. And okay, so there's promise that all these new characters will come into the DCU. This is going to have an impact. And
these new characters, really only Mime and Marionette.
Mime and Marionette, and yeah, the boy was technically already there, but his power base will be, you know, within the boy.
Well, but he's in the Watchmen universe.
Oh, that's correct. So just Mime and Marionette, and where are they? That's what I want to know. They were the two most interesting characters, I would say, in this entire comic. And we've never seen them to date.
I'm wondering if they show up in the Joker War.
That would be cool. That makes me want to read it a little bit more.
I don't know that they do. I don't know.
It would make sense.
For me, the theory that, I guess it was James Stubb, suggested to us that Punchline is nostalgia. Sorry, I don't think that holds water.
Just because of the timeline?
Well, because I don't think, well, first off, I don't know who Cleopatra Pak is, but she's on present day Watchmen world.
Yeah.
Whereas we're 8 months before the birth of Anita Mays, the kid of the daughter of Mime and Marionette. So I think unless there's additional time travel and stuff, she can't possibly be Punchline.
I agree. Yeah, there'd have to be some kind of time element in there, something that happened in between, maybe why we didn't see him, maybe they went back to the Watchmen world. Who knows? Otherwise, yeah, I agree. There's not enough time.
So whether Punchline is either Anita Mays, who hasn't been born yet, or Nostalgia, don't know, but I think those are three different characters. It's all just so bizarre.
I agree. Now I mean, we read this through, and I'm like, I don't feel like it's a bad story. It was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's something that I would never, like, it's not one of the books I would go to and recommend someone read this. Like this is a must-read story.
To me, the only case I would say, yeah, you should, is, and this is something I'd love to do at some point, I think I've talked about it on air before, but doing a series starting with the Flash of Two Worlds, going mm-hmm. through the JLA-JSA team-ups, going through Crisis, Zero Hour, Infinite Crisis, all those sorts of events, and then you eventually get up to Doomsday Clock.
And so, just seeing how those all piece together.
Out of that progression, I can see it.
Yeah, that would make sense.
If you're looking for what would the Watchmen characters be like interacting with the DC Universe, this is the go-to story.
Yeah, correct.
But in and of itself, if I were to recommend a DC event, would I pick this one? No.
No, yeah.
Not first, at least.
Yeah, not first. I think there's been a lot of other books that I would recommend them read that would be much more enjoyable. This one, he tries to write it in an intelligent way. He tries to write in many layers, and he tries to make it deep. Some things he does well, some things he doesn't do very well. There's just a lot of telling, not a lot of it showing how things progress, which I didn't like. There's a lot of cryptic stuff. There's a lot of wasted space. So for me, I was just like, I didn't really like the story just because of the way he used the pages that he had. He had a lot of pages, and I felt like he could have given a lot more entertainment value to it. And instead, it felt like such a chore to get through it. And I was just like, when something's a chore, it's not fun to me.
I think part of it is the story he was telling was not the story I was expecting or wanting to read.
Me too.
And it wasn't a horrible story, but the pacing was such that it seemed to start and stop and be kind of jerky in that respect.
Yeah, I agree.
There was a story that the Luna Brothers did called The Sword, where it was 24 issues, I think it was, and one issue would be heavy on plot, another on action, back on plot, back on action. But once you got used to it, it had a rhythm to it. And this, the rhythm just didn't work.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's just, it felt like the pacing was off for the entire thing. Some things felt too quick, and the other things were just, it would drag and on and on and on. And so it just, very odd. And like I said, like we've said before, it's not a bad book. It's probably something you should read if you want to see DC characters and Watchmen characters. But at the same time, if you're going for a fun read, I wouldn't call this a fun book to read. I'd say it's something that you'll have to go in and look, cryptically go back and reread it to pick up on clues you missed the first time through.
I would say given the density of the story in here, and there's a ton going on.
Yeah.
I would have cut down on the number of gratuitous scene cuts.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there's a couple of times we're cutting between, like, you know, Lex and Lois, and then what's going on with Ozzy and his captives and stuff. And it's like, you know what? Quit cutting back and forth. Just play one scene out and then play the other scene out and be done with it.
And if they did that, I felt like it would have been a tighter story, and it would have been more enjoyable to read. Because there's some things like, okay, I understand the key. Okay, you want to take this movie and this character and make him the key focal point. But you didn't have to put, if we added it all together, maybe, you know, 15, 20 pages of story through, you know, strung out through these 12 issues. That's a big waste of space to me. And for something that's not really the key element of the story.
Well, not only not the key element of the story, but it takes too late in the game for it to even become seemingly relevant versus why do we keep going to it?
Exactly. I mean, here we are in the issue 10 and we're like, okay, this is why this matters. And then issue 12, I mean, there's some happy ending with them, but I was just like, it's just little annoyances like that. But overall, not bad, not sad that we read it. It's just, I wasn't blown away by reading it again. It left me feeling like, okay, I read it. It's cool. I'm done.
It kind of reconfirmed a lot of my original thoughts on it. It had its moments. The individual issues, I think, were better than the series because the story momentum, both because of the slow release pace and the not going back to where it left off, really bothered me.
Yeah, me too.
And it reminds me of some of the Hitchcock, you know, storytelling wisdom of, you know, if you're just seeing a diner and it suddenly blows up, that's shock. That's not suspense. But if you've cut to the bomb and you keep cutting back to the table, you know, the bomb is under, that's suspense. Well, here, we keep cutting to the table and never knowing there's a bomb under there.
Exactly.
So I think there's ways that some of this could have been introduced. I think even some of the stuff from this last issue should have been in the first issue.
Exactly. I agree. If they would have moved some stuff around, it would have made more sense. And then I think there's some things that could have happened. Like, there were some fight scenes where we saw it play out on a TV screen, or we saw people watching and seeing news events. And if they would have shown us the fight scene, it just would have made the book more entertaining. And it's the exact same information, but you gave it to me in the most boring manner possible. And I don't know why he chose to do that.
It's funny because I think this is one of the cases where if DC had done what Marvel tends to do of a event series and then a few side series.
Yeah.
They could have had one side series that was the fight in DC.
Yeah.
They could have had another side series that was the Mars battle, another one that had been the Superman theory playing out in Russia and such. So getting the news shots here, it's, oh, okay, I get what's going on, but if I really want to know, I'll go read that other story.
That would have been really cool, and honestly, they probably would have made a little bit more money, and it would have made the story feel a little bit bigger and fleshed out a little bit more. And that would have been kind of cool. You know, the Mars fight, it could have been an issue, you know? Instead of, it was really quick in this, you know, Vulcan death grip, I'm going to put everyone to sleep, that was taken care of in a panel, you know?
Well, and after that, they just fly back.
Yeah, just fly back. We're done.
Because really, as far as they know, Manhattan just vanishes. They don't even know he goes back to his own world.
Yeah. We might have won. We just don't know.
I mean, at the end of this, do Batman and Superman have any idea what happened with Mime, Marionette, Comedian, Ozymandias, Rorschach, any of that?
No, not really. They're just gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I still want to know how Luther knew what Luther knew, but we'll never know.
I'd have been more okay with it if it had been earlier on and we could have been seeing him. Oh, he knows stuff. What does he know that we don't, or how does he know it, or something?
Yeah, some kind of little hints. That would have been kind of cool.
But to have that as a, you know, 11th or 12th issue reveal, it felt out of nowhere, and he hadn't really been that involved in the story.
Exactly, yeah. Just kind of weird, just some of the things, how they played out. So, eh.
I think there were some great ideas here. I don't think this was the best execution of it from a plot point of view in terms of dialogue, art, individual pages and panels. It was good.
Yeah, I agree.
But this is where the sum of the parts did not supersede the parts.
Yeah. And we do need to get that annotated version, and we do need to get the director's cut or whatever, where I want to see the notes behind it and where he was really intending on going, why it got changed, what changed. Because I feel like the reason why it didn't fit together is because the trajectory was changing throughout the plot. Or throughout the whole story. And I don't know where it changed, but you can almost feel the story change around the middle of it. You could feel it change here and there.
I definitely think that's the case. And if we go back to the discussion we had early on.
Yeah.
This started in November 2017, finished in December 2019. And Geoff Johns stopped being a president and chief creative officer of DC in June 2018.
Yeah.
So at the halfway point, roughly, he lost control of the universe.
Which is interesting, yeah, because he may have said, here's the way I'm going, and somebody else steps in, and this is the way we're going, and now he has to change his story.
I'm willing to bet if we were to see the treatment for it and whatever notes he had initially, that what happened in the last half dozen issues would have been very different.
I agree.
Not to say better or worse, but just different.
Yeah, different. And that's what we really need to know to get the full picture of this. And like we said, it'll come out in a back issues issue or something like that. They'll come out and they'll do the interview with Jeff Johns and he'll talk and here's what I was really intending. Here's what, and it probably will happen after Jeff Johns, leaves DC one day.
Yeah. At some point when he's more or less retired or something, if back issue magazine's still going or something equivalent, we'll get that article, that interview, or maybe he'll just write a book on it, and this is what he was originally planning on doing or something. And I'd be curious about it, but there's so much going on here that it would not be a short little article or something to spell it all out.
Yeah.
But it does remind me of, what was the name of the articles? It was like The Life of Riley or something, that one of the people connected with the Neverending Clone Saga of, I guess, the 90s or whatever that Spider-Man had. It was basically years later, here's what had happened, why we kept going, marketing said to do this, we had this, we were going to end it here, they said no, keep going, you know, and just the behind-the-scenes stuff.
And it helps.
Fascinating.
It helps you realize why they did what they did and maybe not be as frustrated with certain things, because you realize, oh, here's what happened. Here's what he intended. That would have been cool, but because of this, he had to go here. Ah, well, he ended as best he could, you know?
Yeah.
And stuff like that happens. And until you get that backstory, it's tough to have that context that goes with the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think that would be the coolest thing for this, is we got to know the behind the scenes.
Love to. Again, I think this thing has its moments. I'm glad we went back through it.
Yeah,
it took a lot longer than I was thinking it would. I took a lot more notes on it than I thought I would. And at some point, if I had to, could I salvage, I don't want to say salvage this, could I remaster this into a better flow? Maybe, but it'd take a lot of work, and honestly, I'm not willing to put it in.
No, and I'll tell you what, thankfully we split it up into 3-issue chunks, because if we were trying to do 6 issues, it's a lot of material.
Yes. Speaking of which, moving forward as we continue back issue spotlights, I've got more scheduled with you, of course, James. I've got more scheduled with Sam. We're going to be pulling back. We're not doing – here we did like a page-by-page, blow-by-blow, here's what's going on in the story. We're not going to be doing that on future stuff. Sam and I are going to be talking Secret Wars. It's going to be more, hey, we're covering 6 issues. This is kind of what happened in the first. This is what I liked about the second. And trying to go a little bit more, I don't say surface level, but lighter discussion, not – and we'll talk about a couple of key moments here and there probably, because we will do spoilers. But we're not going to do a blow-by-blow plot synopsis kind of a thing like we've done here.
Yeah, keep it fun, light.
Yeah, it's just there's so much going on, and we did that approach for the Earth One stuff and for Doomsday Clock, and I think it made sense to do that because this was a DC event that was building up arguably a new DC universe and is worth taking a closer look at.
Yeah.
But these are longer episodes, and last week's with Sam, I edited out like 30 minutes, and I don't want to make people think that there was 30 minutes of discussion we had. But when we're going through this, there's a little, hey, wait, I've got so much in my brain, I've got to pause and figure out what am I saying, and there's just those gaps in the conversation.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And sometimes I feel like I kind of tune out when you're going, and I feel like you're reading me a story, a bedtime story.
Well, and I kind of was, and that's bad on me. I shouldn't be doing that.
No, that's all good.
But that's why, you know, these recordings that'll take 2 hours are boiling down to an hour and a half-ish or something. And it just takes a while to do that. It's good stuff. I'm glad we did it. But I want to go back more towards a what did we like about it, why should people read it kind of a thing than a almost replacement of the reading experience.
Yeah, that's what we used to do with the weekly comic spotlight. So, yeah, more of that.
Oh, that's what the back issue spotlights used to be. It had just been years since I'd done them. So
yeah, cool.
Got to get back into that mode. So we should have a new previews coming out soon. Comics have started shipping again. You already got your shipment, right?
Yeah, I got my shipment today. I was kind of happy. It's the smallest shipment I've had in a while, but, you know, I'm okay with that. I'm happy with that.
My shipment's going to have 3 comics and a hardcover, and it got to the UPS store before the UPS store opened, so they're going to try again, I guess, tomorrow. I'm trying to get it. I'd forgotten to tell Eric just to send it to my house since I'm working from home these days. It'll either show up at the house or it'll show up at the UPS store tomorrow. I'll pick it up, or, you know, if it misses the UPS store again, I'll just go pick it up from them after the truck gets back to their location. But I should have it tomorrow and stuff. And then we'll see what happens with Marvel doing every other week for a little bit. They've projected what they're going to be shipping out through, I think, the end of July. And once we get past the middle of the July, I'm starting to get about a half a dozen things from Marvel. A lot of it's Empire.
Yeah. It seems like, you know, there's some stories that came out on Bleeding Cool and, you know, other websites. They basically pulled back a lot of the books, even in this last previews, you know, you go through the order form. They're going to go ahead and push out Empire. It should be a big seller for the shops to get them on their feet. But they pulled back most of the production, and they're going to slow roll it out here and there to see how on their feet the shops are, how much can they handle, not overload them with their budgets, you know, having to buy new books when they haven't had cash in a while, to try and help them out. I think that's what they're trying for, but I honestly don't know. But a lot of production is kind of held back right now.
Well, and what I'm seeing is they're finishing off the Iron Man 2020 stuff.
Yep.
They're kicking out Empire, which should give it some good legs to stand on, not having a lot of competition within the Marvel Universe. They're keeping things like Avengers, Fantastic Four, and the X-Men stuff moving forward. So really kind of the linchpins of the universe, I think they're making some good decisions.
I agree. I think they are. I think they're kicking out the things that'll make the stores money relatively quickly. And like I said, even though I didn't like that DC and Marvel, they both kind of went to some digital stuff with like the last few issues of this, you know, series or that series. Luckily, they were smaller series and they'll come out with a trade. And honestly, most of them, I'm just going to be done with them. I'm never going to finish them. But at least the big books are coming out and I'll be able to enjoy those.
I am a little annoyed that Marvel went digital only with Ironheart 2020, Ant-Man number 4, Star number 4, and that DC's having some issues getting their books to Diamond, which means it's going to take a little longer for them to get to me.
Yeah. And what was the one that DC, I guess it was Supergirl, or was it Supergirl?
Supergirl and Terrifics, I think, maybe going digital Terrifics. Only.
Yeah, like the last 2 issues or 3 issues of Terrifics. So it's unfortunate because people who like to have completist collections, I guess now you can complete it in digital or by the trade.
It's not the same thing.
It's not. I'm kind of disappointed with it, but it is what it is, and the virus has bit us all in the behind.
I'm a little more understanding, actually, of DC doing that with an ongoing series that's winding down.
Than the miniseries.
Yeah, a miniseries to get 3/5 of the way done and then go digital only annoys me.
Yeah, I understand.
So, we still got the roundtable, recommendation roundtable stuff. Send in clips for that. When I get enough, I'll kick another episode out. Right now, I've still got the one. So, maybe those aren't going to stick around because people aren't interested, in which case, that's fine. But hopefully there's enough interest, because I think there's plenty of stuff out there for people to be enjoying on the different streaming services, comics, novels, video games, etc.
I agree.
And then once we get that previews out, we'll start the preview spotlight back up.
Yeah, that'll be kind of cool. I'm ready to get a new previews. I've had this old one sitting here on my table for 2 months. We finally used it. And I'm interested to see, because I guess they'll be combining stuff, and I'm looking to see how slim it will be, or... You know, I'm just curious to see what it looks like.
Yeah, same here. Same here. I think there's some changes that need to happen. And I'm going to be taking a much closer look at what titles I add to my list, because these days everything else is just falling away out of normal attrition from miniseries or titles ending. And I may just tighten up what I'm getting a little bit. Not drastically, but we'll see.
Yeah, I tightened up. I went down quite a bit on the singles, and... I have some more cuts that I'm going to be doing, but a lot of stuff is kind of petering out for me. Like, on this last order form, I kept Detective Comics because it tied into the Joker War thing, which mm-hmm. I do want to read Joker War. So I got that. But honestly, I'm probably done with Detective, but that's just me. I'm kind of done with it. But I kept this one just because of the Joker War thing. So there'll be things like that are coming off. Then there'll be some series that are wrapping up that I was reading. And I cut off a lot of the, I know this sounds bad, but small indie stuff, that it was good, but it wasn't consistent. I didn't know when it was coming out, and I have too much stuff, and I don't want to have too much stuff. I want to have a manageable amount of material to read, so I've cut back on a lot.
Yeah, and there's still the question of, should we continue just moving forward with back issue spotlights moving forward, or go back to the weekly spotlight when there's a threshold amount of material?
Yeah, that I'd like to hear from people that listen to this. Hopefully somebody says something. Nobody says anything, but see
so
what they want
to
hear.
There has been zero push to move back to the weekly comic spotlight.
I agree. So there's been nothing said. So I'm okay with back issues. We can keep doing those. But I'm good either way. I think it's been a little bit more less time consuming, actually alternating with Sam, that's been kind of cool for me, but that's just, you know, selfish, you know, because I got 1 week where I don't have to record. So I've been enjoying that. That's made it fun. But I'm really good either way. With the back issues, we can plan out way further in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And right now it's just, you know, luck of the draw. We don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and I've got one or two I want to do with Eric Cowabunga that I'll try to get into the rotation at some point.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week as Sam and I talk about Secret Wars 1 through 4. And yes, 1 through 4, even though I said 1 through 6 earlier, we decided to do it in three chunks. And then in 2 weeks when James and I go through Red Team 1 through 7.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.